Yeah, welcome to Open Up. I'm Peter Robinson, this week standing in for David LaTulip. Open Air is the Bay Area's cultural guide to the best of what is happening in the arts and culture around San Francisco. We have a mixed but wonderful lineup today, which ranges from theatre, a new play opening at Marin Theatre Company. We're going to hear some jazz from Sonny Holland, and we're going to start off with some interesting talk about the California Bach Society, and my guest is Paul Flight. Paul, welcome back to the studio again.
Thank you very much. Very pleased to be here.
So this time we're looking particularly at two specific pieces by Bach, and you're going to be performing at three different venues in San Francisco, Palo Alto, and Berkeley. So let's start talking about the first piece that you'll be producing.
Well, it's a very interesting program. The music is less well known than the big pieces of Bach that we've done in prior years. This is less well known music, but it's a cantata, number 21, Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis, which basically translates to I have in my life many afflictions and troubles. But my comfort for those would be the salvation of Jesus Christ and the life afterlife. So it's a quite a dark piece in lots of ways, very poignant, but then at the end very, very triumphant. The trumpets and drums make their appearance only in the last movement in a glorious, exuberant finale. It's lovely music. And it has lots of choruses, which is why I program it, because I'm always looking for cantatas with lots of choruses, since I run a chorus.
Well, they can certainly keep people awake. That's the first thing they do. But I also noticed with this piece that we do move from almost the sad and the tragic to a sense of redemption. And is that how you read the piece?
Exactly, yes. And in the final chorus in particular, there it's a setting of worthy is the lamb that was slain. It's just like at the end of Messiah. It's the exact same text. It's quite exuberant, and as I say, the trumpets and drums make their appearance there for the first time, first and only time.
Now, these are three different types of churches that you're going to be performing in between San Francisco, Palo Alto, and Berkeley. How are the acoustics in these different venues?
Well, they're all very, very nice, each one quite different. In San Francisco, if you come to the concert in San Francisco, we're at St. Mark's Lutheran, which is on O'Farrell Street. It's a very beautiful space. It was built by German immigrants. The interior has just been redone recently. A beautiful acoustic, good lighting, and just an altogether lovely place to hear a concert. In Palo Alto, the church that we normally perform at, All Saints in Palo Alto, it's more of a 1960s construction, lots of concrete, but it does create an extremely live acoustic, and as long as one knows how to deal with that acoustic and doesn't oversing, it's a wonderful place to hear a concert. And then finally, First Congregational in Berkeley is the premier venue for concert goers.
And that's restored now after the fire.
That's right. Last year at this time when the fire happened, we were scheduled to do our St. Matthew Passion, and it had to be moved because of the fire burning. But we're just getting in there now. We're one of the first groups to get back in there to perform since they've remodeled the sanctuary, or at least repaired it.
So, and how big is your group, your orchestra, your choir? How many people?
So the Bach Society differs from some of the other groups labeled Bach and Society by the fact that we are a chamber chorus of 30 to 35 singers. In that way, we're sort of similar to the American Bach soloists, kind of size. Mm-hmm. And our orchestra is a similar size for this. There are 18 players, mm-hmm. Two oboes, three trumpets, timpani, and the usual complement of strings, plus a chamber organ. It's quite typical, and maybe typical for what Bach would have had during the period himself.
Good. Well, I think we'll hear the first piece that we have just been talking about, and then maybe we can highlight some of the pieces that people should be listening to if they come to one of these concerts.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, this is an early piece by Bach, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
That's right. He was in the court at Weimar when he wrote this particular cantata. An interesting story about it is that at that time there were two dukes of Weimar. One of them was interested in chamber music, and the other was interested in sacred music. And so Bach was essentially serving two masters at the time.
Difficult.
Yes. But this is a piece that he thought a lot of, and he actually used it again when he moved later on to his principal job in Leipzig.
Mm-hmm. And I think it has a kind of spiritual opening which takes you just slowly into where the mind goes in terms of what you initially called the dark side before it moves up at the end.
That's right, because Bach, you know, was a master of rhetoric, musical rhetoric. He was very good at portraying musically a particular meaning of a word or meaning of a phrase. And so the word bekümmernis, or afflictions or troubles, he emphasizes the strong syllable in there with a dissonance each time. And so one really gets the sense that the singers are troubled in some way because of the dissonances he creates every other beat.
Mm-hmm. And the second piece that you'll be performing, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a Missa Brevis. It's the one in G major. Bach wrote four of these Missa Brevises. It's not clear why he wrote them. It's speculated that he may have had a patron for which he produced these special Latin mass settings. It's essentially a setting of the Kyrie and the Gloria portion of the Latin mass. And the Gloria that we're just about to hear is an exuberant and very, very intricate piece. It starts with the women of the choir singing Gloria in Excelsis Deo, and then follows a very complex and energetic fugue for the instruments.
So the Gloria, whichever way you say it or do it, is always a rousing piece. Gloria, there's no way you can even say those words without going up, so to speak.
That's true. And this is extremely rousing.
Good. Okay, here we go. Get ready to be roused. You're listening to Open Air. I'm Peter Robinson, guest host this week, and I'm talking to Paul Flight, the artistic director for the California Bach Society. And we've just been talking about a very rousing Gloria in Excelsis Deo. And I know that you're performing at different venues. So let's talk a little bit about the dates of the performance, October the 20th and the 22nd. Is that correct?
20th, 21st, and 22nd. Yeah. The 20th will be in San Francisco here at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. That's an evening concert. On the 21st, we'll be in Palo Alto at All Saints Episcopal Church in downtown Palo Alto. And then on Sunday afternoon, the 22nd, we'll be at First Congregational Church in Berkeley. It's a 4 p.m. concert.
And I just noticed that while we were playing that, Gloria, everybody here in the studio, they were popping up and down. I think there's something about the way the music of Bach speaks to the spirit. I think that's what I want to say, that it takes you places that words can't always do. That's my feeling.
That's so true. And in fact, he's so good musically at preaching that he's sometimes referred to as the fifth evangelist, for the very reason that he's so good at portraying the scriptures and the religious content of the music and bringing it to life.
And when these pieces, or the different ones, were written, now, would they be performed in a court, or would they have been performed in a church on the original concept of the music?
Well, so a lot of these courts had their own private chapels,
right,
establishments. And so in the case of Cantata 21, this would have been performed in the Duke's private chapel by his chapel forces, his musical forces, singers and players. But then, of course, when Bach moved on from Weimar, Mar, and then to Curitan, and then finally to Leipzig, at Leipzig, his responsibilities were to... He was responsible for the music in all the town's principal churches. So so in each case, you wouldn't have had a court performance, but really a chapel performance, and then finally a very, very public performance in Leipzig Church.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I've found, listening to Bach, particularly live concerts, is that assuming the acoustics in the venue is fine, there is a sort of intimacy. I feel he's one of those composers who almost speaks to each individual person in the audience.
Yeah, it's true. And I find his music is not as immediately obvious as, say, Handel's music is. Or you really, when you hear a piece of Handel, the aesthetic is immediately obvious. Sometimes Bach is incredibly intimate and complex, and so it takes a few hearings to really get to the depth of the music. It isn't immediately obvious, but you do sense that it's there, all of the richness.
And it comes to you. It's one of those, I feel I can sit still and let it come to me. And that's a real tribute to the composer.
Absolutely.
Again, now, just for people who want to check in, how will they reach you or reach the California Bach Society?
Well, you can go to our website, www.calbach.org, and that will take you to links where you can purchase tickets for our concert. You can get tickets in advance there, but also you could just come to the door, and we'll have tickets on offer for everybody.
And the three venues again, in Palo Alto, in San Francisco, and in Berkeley. And do you want to give that website one more time?
Sure, www.calbach.org.
Good. Good to have you with us, Paul. Thank you for coming in.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Peter Robinson, sitting in this week for David LaTulip, and my guest now is a jazz singer. So we're going for a jazz vocal, a very different setting to Bach. In fact, we're talking about somebody whose new CD is best described as soft power jazz. Sonny Holland, welcome to KLW.
Thank you so much.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of where your performances are and some of the pieces that you'll be singing.
Sure, I'd love to. I am going to be doing a concert this Sunday at 7:30 over at SF Jazz, and that's in Hayes Valley. And we'll have a full band with us, and we're just going to have a great time. We're going to showcase quite a few of the tunes on the record, and we're going to do some others as well.
Okay, now the new record has got like 12 different numbers on it, I notice, which goes everything from Moon River to some that I actually don't know, The Streets of Philadelphia. Is that the Bruce Springsteen one?
Yes, it is. And that, you know, that was written for the film Philadelphia that Jonathan Demme directed. And it's a beautiful, beautiful film, and it was necessary, I think, for Hollywood to step up and
recognize.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Springsteen was solicited to write a song for the film. And I think he had written one song prior, and the director or whoever just said, no, I don't like this, let's do it, work on another one. And honestly, Springsteen just hit the mark with The Streets of Philadelphia. It's one of my favorite songs to perform. And to me, he really captured compassion with the song, and it's perfect for the film.
It's a very moving song.
It's
and
just
I think
beautiful.
I think it reinforces the movie at a critical point.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, I notice here that we also have something which I think we're going to hear from you in a second called I Only Have Eyes for You.
That's right.
Which immediately made me think as I was driving in today of another song called Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
I love that one too.
So why don't we cut the chatter and we'll go straight into the music.
Love to.
Going to hear now Sonny Holland singing I Only Have Eyes for You.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you. And dear, I wonder if you find love, an optical illusion too. All the stars out tonight, I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, 'cause I only thank you.
Bravo, bravo, and a great rendition. And I should add that not only was that live here in the studio, but she was accompanied by Jerry Holland on the guitar, who is a regular accompanist.
Yes, he
and
is.
In fact, has composed a song which we may hear towards the end called Best Defense.
That's right.
Now, outside SF Jazz, you're doing some performances at the Ritz, is that correct?
Yes, we play at the Ritz-Carlton San Francisco 3 nights a week. We're there on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights from 6 until 9.
6 until 9.
Mm-hmm.
And will we be hearing at those performances some of the songs on this album here?
Yes, absolutely. We do just about every one of those. And about 30 more.
And about 30 more, yeah, yeah.
Right.
So let's go back to SF Jazz. And mm-hmm. for people who may not be familiar with the venue, just describe where you'll be performing.
We will be in the Joe Henderson Lab, which is, it's not the big auditorium. It's a smaller room as you come in to the venue. And it's just really easy to find. You walk through the main doors and it's on the right-hand side. There are still a few tickets left. But we are looking to sell out. I think it will.
And do you have a website that people can contact you?
Yes, I do. It's www.sonyholland.com, and you spell Sony, S-O-N-Y, and my last name is just like the country, H-O-L-L-A-N-D.
That's Sony Holland, and that's going to be Sunday, October the 15th.
Yes.
At the SF Jazz. And then on weekdays, did you say Monday?
Over at the Ritz,
yeah.
We're there on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturdays.
Wednesday, Friday, mm-hmm. and Saturday. And if you will look at some of the songs on this album, because there's quite a wide range,
mm-hmm.
How do you make your choices about what works for you?
That's one of the most difficult things, particularly because I work with my husband. So we never agree on anything.
Uh-huh.
But ultimately, we know we have to make a choice. There were actually, I don't know, 4 or 5 songs that didn't make this record because it just got to be too much material.
No.
So that'll be for the next record. But, you know, what we do is we try to record the songs, the material that we've been working on, like let's say at the Ritz or any of our other gigs.
Right.
So we like to do things that we haven't recorded before, and none of these we've recorded before. But they all sort of go together because Jerry does all the arrangements, and the primary instrument is the guitar. So what he does is he builds everything else around the guitar. So mm-hmm. it just all seems to work. And
well,
it's
I think it's a good example of teamwork, because I always used to say if two people agree, one of them is superfluous. And you can use that next time
that's
you
right.
get into a debate. But let's talk about the one that he wrote, which is called Best Defense.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that come about?
Well, we were at a pizza establishment, and there was this darling, darling server, and she was our server. And she was so sweet, you just want to go brush your teeth. That's how sweet she was.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, you know, and I leaned over to Jerry and I said, I hope she doesn't become jaded like the rest of us. You know? I mean, I really did. And that's what inspired this next song. And it's just a really sweet tune.
Okay, so we're going to hear Best Defense. This is a song composed by Jerry Holland. He is playing the guitar and he is accompanying Sonny Holland. And here we go, live in the studio. Here we are with Best Defense.
Sweet girl in a cynical world, how will you survive? You need a hard shell around your tender heart to keep your hopes alive. 'Cause it's a cold ride on a lonely road to get to where you're going. They will press you for answers that you'll have no way of knowing. You can try, still it makes no sense. That's why letting it fly is your best defense. Bright star in a cloudy sky, whose sea shine will you stare down the fiery rain with your light divine? They would test you with troubles in a way you down with sorrow. They will occupy your present with concerns about tomorrow. You can try, still it makes no sense. That's why letting it fly is your best defense. Oh, look what they've done to me. Such a long way from where
Thank you. So we've just been listening to a live performance here with Sonny Holland singing a song composed by her husband, Jerry Holland. It's called Best Defense, but for me, I'm going to call it the pizza song.
I love
it. Because I think the story behind it of trying to keep a smile on a pizza server.
That sounds like a great way to remember
so
that song.
So that she doesn't get jaded. So, again, just to recap, Sonny is appearing in the SF Jazz and then also on Wednesday, Thursdays and Fridays at the Ritz-Carlton here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to give us the best website to find you and get more information?
Yes, it's www.sonnyholland.com.
Okay. Well, welcome. We wish you well with SF Jazz and thank you again
thank
for
you
coming
so much.
In.
Thank you.
I'm bruised and battered, I couldn't tell what I felt. I was unready. of Philadelphia.
Yes, that indeed was The Streets of Philadelphia. It was performed by Sonny Holland, who is appearing live at SF Jazz, and also on Wednesday, Thursdays and Fridays at the Ritz. And now we're moving from music to the world of art. Painting, sculpture, murals, in fact, everything you might expect to see in a tour of, I'm going to use the word artspan, and we're with the executive director, Joanne Madonna. Welcome to KLW.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about how things work, what the sort of tour would be, what sort of studios we might go into.
Oh, great. So what you can expect is to see over 800 artists over the course of 5 weeks. Artspan is the organization, and what we host is what we call SF Open Studios. It launches tonight in our exhibit, which is at SOMARTS. We have a incredible 450-person group show, which means there's 450 different artists that are represented, and they're all original works. We throw a great party. People come, and they're able to walk around, look at the work, pick up our guide. We have a wonderful 200-page catalog of all local arts, and people can plan their weekends over the next 5 weekends.
And say a little bit about where these studios are.
So the studios are throughout all of San Francisco. We have 5 weekends, and we divide the city into quadrants, basically. I say quadrants, which means four, but this is the first year ever we're going to have 5 weekends.
Right.
This weekend begins with the Hunters Point Shipyard, which is a wonderful artist colony. It's been around over 30 years. There's over 300 artists that participate. They've been making art out there for decades, and it's a really popular, several thousand people go to look at the art there. And then from there, we divided the rest of the city up into four separate weekends. So the west side is the following weekend, south and east is the weekend after that. Then we have the north and east quadrant. And then finally, we end in Central City, which is kind of the Mission and the nearby neighborhoods there.
So there's plenty of opportunities if you're willing to go to the different sections of San Francisco and see some wonderful works.
Exactly. And the idea is that you can pick up our guide, and you can find some art that you enjoy, and maybe you really love beautiful, bright, abstract painting. And so then you can go to the Mission District and go to 1890 Bryant Street. Then there we have over 50 artists, and you can go and find the artist that you really love, and maybe you go get brunch, you hang out in the neighborhood, you go to a cafe, you go to the building, you might see one artist you're on the way to go see, and then we have a great artist named Lucky Rapp who does these really beautiful, very high-gloss works and has words on it, and that actually catches your eye. So we believe that art really does inspire, and you think you might have a particular taste, and you go and explore in one direction, and because of all the studios being open, you might be touched and inspired by something you didn't expect originally.
So starting, I think, this weekend at Hunters Point, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yep. And any particular names or exhibits that spring to mind that might be on show at Hunters Point?
There are a lot of really wonderful artists that have been very well established, been making art for a long time. A very popular artist is someone named Eric Joyner, and he does very highly rendered paintings of robots and donuts, and they're usually set in very interesting places, like maybe a trial court case, or maybe it's a landscape with a giant donut just floating on the horizon. Another really popular artist is a woman named Jenny Robinson. She does very highly rendered prints. She does etchings and lithographs and large scale, sometimes, you know, 5, 6, 7 feet large, and she's definitely a popular destination.
And then the next weekend would be where?
So the next weekend is the West Side. It's okay. Predominantly the Sunset District and the Richmond District. Mm-hmm. And we have some fabulous artists that participate there as well. We're also hosting a bike tour for the first time. We have several sites, so you can get on your bike and pedal around and go and see quite a few artist studios that way and be chummy with some other people on bikes. Mm-hmm. A very popular studio over there is called Three Fish Studios. Mm-hmm. It's a husband and wife team. They own their beautiful little space. They oftentimes will have a concert in their back garden. Mm-hmm. And Eric is well known for he's also a printmaker. He does lino cut prints.
Right.
He made a large print of a bear this year, just after the election, and it became so popular that the California legislature picked it up as kind of a new, maybe it's called Rising California, and everybody in the state legislature picked it up and has a print in their offices, and
it was
on the cover of Time magazine,
right.
And so they're a very, very great destination to go there and see what's going on. They also have Kyle Trefney. He's a young artist. He is at the School of Ruth Asawa School for the Arts,
right.
And he's an artist in his own right, but he's under the age of 18. Is fantastic. Mm-hmm. He does paintings of animals, and he gives all his money to charity to support snow leopards.
Right.
There's also Paul Madonna, who's a well-known local artist and author, and Eric's wife Annie does collages and also paintings. So you can see a lot in one stop.
Yeah, and with these different neighborhoods, do any of them, for good or bad reasons, represent scenes from that neighborhood? Are there any local artists, and you would say, gee, that's just the piece of Richmond I recognize, or that's...
You know, I think so. I mean, I think that artists typically pick up the environments that are around them. And so, you know, when I think of someone picking up exactly where they are, I kind of call it a hyper-local artist. Mm-hmm. As the example I gave at Three Fish Studios, there was a collaboration between Annie Galvin and Paul Madonna.
Okay.
He did a drawing of a building that was right there on 46th Avenue and Irving. And then Annie painted in some surfers and their surfboards walking by. So it's a really nice collaboration that is absolutely hyper-local to the surfers and what you see out there.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked essentially about paintings, collages. Does sculpture in any way come into this at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Really, the wonderful thing about Open Studios is that you get to see over 800 artists and the different styles. And there's jewelry artists. There is absolutely sculpture artists. There are people who make leather goods. Lots of paintings, but also lots of photography. And we believe that art really does build bridges and touches and inspires people. And the most inspiring place is to go into the studio where the artists are there making their craft.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my favorite sculptures, one of them is named Jason Bernhardt. He's at Islaus Creek, which is this weekend coming up. And he does beautiful marble stone sculptures. And it's definitely worth a destination to go to Islaus Creek, which is in partnership with the Hunters Park Shipyard this weekend.
And he actually works in marble?
He does. He does.
I mean, that's a difficult... I always think it would be difficult to work in marble.
They are huge, beautiful sculptures, and he encourages you to touch them when you're there. They're so soft and silky smooth and cool to the touch and enormous. And he is a carpenter by trade and does construction, and his heart passion is really doing these beautiful sculptures out of marble. So that's why I think Open Studios is just such a great thing, and especially in a time where things seem kind of challenging and sometimes we don't know what to do, you go to art, and art soothes, and art is it's a language we can all kind of get behind and be a part of. And sometimes you don't need words. You just need things to look at and to experience.
And you mentioned jewelry. So what sort of jewelry might the range go from what to what?
Oh, there's a big range. There's a woman named Sasha Merritt, and she uses kind of natural elements. She might do stones that she finds in a river, and she'll wrap copper wire around them and turn them into necklaces. There's a very fine jeweler named Catherine Maley, and I actually own quite a bit of her stuff because I love it. It's gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And we have an artist named Flora Davis, and she's a great sculptress. She started out as a painter and started working with metals and does sculpture. And it turns out that she has a very fluffy white cat, and she actually uses some of that cat fur and turns it into jewelry. And
oh my goodness.
It's interesting, and some people absolutely love it. And it's quite beautiful to look at, and some people think it's a little strange sometimes when you find that this beautiful ball of fur wrapped up in metal is actually cat fur.
Now, we live, you know, in I always think of a high-tech age, and sometimes high-tech is actually influenced the way art goes. Do we have any, you mentioned robots at the beginning, do we have any high-tech artists?
I'd say that a lot of artists use technology in ways you don't really expect. A lot of artists might use software in order to manipulate their images, or they might use it to help render something that they're working through. We definitely have some artists that use light in their art and program the lighting. We have an artist named Romy Randev who used this beautiful glass panels, so very natural feel, and then he would backlight it with LEDs that were sensitive to movement. And so you could interact with it through this technologically based software, but really you were looking at glass and then you were looking at your own reflection as you move through it.
Yeah, and I've seen that similar effect with mirrors. People do artwork using mirrors. And I was also noticing at a gallery I was at the other day that the person, believe it or not, had used a colour photocopy machine to change the actual colours they'd used on the original painting, and believe they got closer to the truth. Now, if truth and art come together, that's always going to be a question. So let's go back to where we can find out more about SF Open Studios. Do you have a website and some information?
Absolutely. We have many, many sources for you to find weekends to go visit. www.artsman.org is our site. At our site, you can find information on every weekend. We also have an online guide. We also have an Apple-based iOS application that you can download, and you can look at every weekend. You can pin your favorites. It will map it for you. Again, we have this beautiful 200-page printed guide, full color. We have over 550 artists in that specifically, and every weekend we have a map that shows you where you can go. We have over 500 sources where those guides can be picked up all over the city and at artist studios as well.
And starting this weekend, we're out at Hunter's Point, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, do you want to give an address for that?
Oh, gosh. It's
a center point for it.
It is actually at the very tail end of Evans Street that turns into Inis. And you can look on any map and actually look at the very tail end of Hunter's Point and find the Hunter's Point shipyard. It's going through a pretty big renovation right now. They're building a lot of condos out there. They're revitalizing a lot of that area. All the studios that are there are going to be saved and put into a brand new studio building, so the artist will not be removed from the premises but will be embedded into that new property as they develop over the next decade.
And the printed guide, how would you pick one of those? Could you buy one of those?
Actually, we provide them for free to the entire community, and they are at locations. We have them delivered to over 150 locations at cafes and businesses throughout the city, and almost all artists will have them in the studios. You can come by SoMarts at 934 Brannan Street, where our exhibit is up for the next 5 weeks. We're open every day except Mondays to come in and see the 450 pieces of art. And from there, we also have the guides, and we have a beautiful full poster map that has thumbnails of all the artists that are participating, and we also have a map on the back so you can go find them.
Well, that sounds like great information if you want to catch up with the wonderful world of, I'm going to call it, San Francisco art. And you don't have to go just this weekend. In fact, you've got a total of 4 more weeks after this.
We do. We start this weekend and we go all the way through November 14th.
And there's 800 different pieces or artists to choose from, so there's plenty on the menu.
Yes.
It's called Art Span. I've been speaking to Joan Madonna. I want to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And that was a piece from Bach's Cantata, because early on we were speaking to Paul Flight about the California Bach Society. Hi, I'm Peter Robinson, standing in this week for David LaTulip. You're listening to Open Air. So we're moving from art now to live theatre. In fact, a brand new play, which had its premiere this week at the Marin Theatre Company. It's called Thomas and Sally. It's by playwright Thomas Bradshaw. And the Thomas and Sally in question is Thomas Jefferson and, of course, Sally Hemings. So we're into an area of at least quiet controversy where historians themselves have only got limited evidence to write their scripts or write their story from. And the way that Thomas Bradshaw has decided to present this play is through the eyes initially of two female college students who are about to do a paper, one of them is about to do a paper on the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings. It's the only play I've ever been to where the opening line is dildo, and it took me by total surprise because I didn't realize exactly what was going on, but these young girls are having a interesting conversation about that. But then we move from the current contemporary sexual situation to, in fact, what really is a very interesting historic sexual situation. And the settings, I think, are important because at different points the play moves between Paris, France, and Virginia from 1735 to actually contemporary when we're talking about the two female students. And of course, at the issue of the play, the key turning point is, and to put it very bluntly, can you be a slave and can you be a free person at the same time? And that is the real historical twist in this particular play. Jefferson in this particular play is played by Mark Anderson Phillips, and he's a very intellectual, philosophical type of Jefferson. One of the pieces I liked was when he was playing the violin, because Jefferson was very much a Renaissance man. He liked art, he liked architecture, he liked philosophy. He certainly played music. And I think to some extent, perhaps governing, although he wrote the key words in the Constitution, all men are equal, that was only part of his existence. But we also have other historic characters from the time, people who in their own way had an influence on not only the Constitution but indeed the early years of America, from John Adams to Benjamin Franklin. And then at the heart of the romance, if it's a romance, at the heart of the affair is, of course, Sally Hemings, played by Tara Pacheco. It's a very complicated but interesting relationship. And I mentioned early on, can you be a slave and can you be free at the same time? And that, of course, is the core of the play. The play leaves you with a sense of ambiguity. There was a law in Virginia in the 18th century that if a slave was given his or her freedom, after 1 year they had to leave so they could not stay in the household. In Sally Hemings' case, she would give birth to six children. She obviously made a decision to stay. Under what circumstance, of course, is really part of the sequence. I found, because again, we're dealing with history where there's only limited documentation, that occasionally maybe the imagination of the playwright began to take over. And the time frame is something you have to pay a lot of attention to, because you're moving from contemporary times with the two students. You're then moving to the period of time when Jefferson was in Paris, and you get a whole different situation in France where, again, slaves could achieve their freedom or be given their freedom. And that's one of the decisions, should the Sally Hemings and brother, should they return to Virginia? And then you're back in Virginia again in the years that followed. So at a time when political issues such as Black Lives Matter are part of our everyday consideration. This play, I think, is almost perfect timing to raise the issue about whether or not we live in a true democracy, a true free society, and whether, in fact, Jefferson's own words, all men are equal, has actually materialized. The play is running at the Marin Theatre Company in Mill Valley. It runs until October 29. And I think if you're a historian, if you're a theatre goer, there may well be something you want to put your nose in, have a think about, maybe read the original documents if you have the time, and then see how the playwright Thomas Bradshaw has presented this story.
I'm just a gigolo. And everywhere I go,
gigolo,
people
gigolo,
know the part
gigolo,
I'm playing.
Gigolo, gigolo, gigolo,
pay for every dance,
gigolo,
selling each romance.
Gigolo,
oh,
gigolo,
what they're saying.
Gigolo, gigolo, gigolo.
And there will come a ticket, and youth will pass away. What will they say about me?
When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo.
Life goes on without me. I'm just a gigolo,
gigolo,
and everywhere I go,
gigolo,
people
gigolo,
know the part
gigolo,
I'm playing.
Gigolo, gigolo,
pay for every dance,
gigolo,
selling each romance.
Gigolo,
oh,
gigolo,
what they're saying.
Gigolo, gigolo, gigolo.
And there will come a day, and youth will pass away. Well, 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 what will they say about me?
When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo.
Well, that was The Village People. I actually was not thinking of Thomas Jefferson at the time. And in fact, it's going to be one of the music and dance numbers that we're going to be playing at the San Francisco Literary Society. On November the 2nd, the Literary Society is putting on a musical soiree. It's called Seduced by a Song and a Dance. And we're going to be looking at different classic numbers from musicals, from movies, where the iconic moment of the film or the play comes to life when the performers actually move into music. They move into song and dance. And I think sometimes when one sees the totality of a musical, one forgets the actual intricacy of how song and dance come together. Something which involves body, mind, spirit, feet, legs, hand movements, gestures. In fact, a whole totality of what I call acting with a capital A, and sometimes with a voice thrown in. So, of course, there will be one of those famous numbers called Let's Face the Music and Dance from Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, which I think is a good example of a song that also tells a story, because prior to that, the scene has been set in a gambling casino, and suddenly the spinning wheel on the roulette has gone wrong, and now they have to make a decision, having lost all their money, hence the phrase, Let's Face the Music, which we still use now today. Let's Face the Music. Let's Face the Music and Dance. And with that, we go into one of the great all-time song and dance numbers. We'll also be looking at the tap dancing of Sammy Davis Jr. He seems like an echo from the past, but in the Vegas days, he would be up there hoofing away. And I think tap dance itself speaks both to the ears, to the feet, and, of course, to the music, because you're controlling your feet to emphasize how the rhythm of the song plays. There will also be another scene from Gene Kelly. He's one of my great icons of song and dance. And in this case, he's actually dancing not with a lady, but with a mop. It's the famous mop dance where he jumps across the floor and suddenly brings everything to life. So this particular evening, it's called Seduced by a Song and a Dance. It's at the San Francisco Literary Society. It will be at the library in Sausalito. And I'm going to give a number for you to find out more details for this particular fun event. It's area code 415-381-6671. And I'll give you the number again in a second in case you have time to get a piece of paper and a pen. And this will be on November the 2nd, a Thursday evening at 7 p.m. It's called Seduced by a Song and a Dance. And if you'd like more details, here comes the number a second time. 415-381-6671. The best example, I think, of a seduction song comes at a magic moment in a movie called Some Like It Hot. And here we have Marilyn Monroe, of all people, beckoning from behind to encourage what we all wanted to do. I want to be loved by you. So let's hear Marilyn Monroe.
I want to be loved by you, just you, nobody else but you. I want to be loved by you alone, boop-boop-be-doo. I want to be kissed by you, just you, nobody else but you. I want to be kissed by you alone. I couldn't aspire to anything higher than to feel the desire to make you my own. Ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-doo-dee-dum. I want to be loved by you, just you, nobody else but you.
Yes, that indeed was Marilyn Monroe saying something that we all want. I want to be loved by you. I'm Peter Robinson, this week standing in for open air host David LaTulip. I want to thank at the editing and all the magic that brought all this music and the editing together, Ashley Ann Creeborn, and our producer, Neil Springles. You've been listening to Open Air.